This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
I think just the holistic nature of this plan and how it's looking at the impacts of our fossil fuel infrastructure and how that impacts communities across the nation is a really interesting and almost innovative way, considering how far the Democrats have come just in the past 4 to 8 years on this issue.
Infrastructure is sort of the unsung hero of a functioning society. It's hard to get across town without a reliable road, hard to keep people healthy without clean drinking water, hard to fight climate change without ready renewable energy sources, and hard to right historical wrongs without accessible transit systems that support greater equity. This week on Sea Change Radio, we take a deep dive into the Biden administration's proposed $2 trillion infrastructure bill with environmental journalist Rebecca Lieber. We break down the bill's significant climate and energy-related policies, look at the politics surrounding it, and discuss whether the proposal should be considered part of Green New Deal legislation. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by environmental journalist Rebecca Lieber. Rebecca, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
It's great to be back on.
So you are leaving Mother Jones for Vox, but you have a piece that I wanted to discuss that's on motherjones.com that we'll link to on seachangeradio.com. It's entitled Biden's Infrastructure Plan is Much More Than That, But Does It Go Far Enough? If you can give us the bullet points of the climate elements of the infrastructure plan for our listeners, that would be terrific.
Yeah, I think one way to think about this is kind of a culmination of Biden's promises on the campaign trail to blend issues like racial injustice, economic inequality, and the climate crisis in one infrastructure package. So this is kind of the Biden version of a Green New Deal. So there is a lot here that is really new and exciting for environmentalists. So first of all, this is a $2 trillion plan, and a huge chunk of that is directed towards bolstering clean energy investment and things like electric vehicle infrastructure and cleaner cars, cleaner buildings, and a cleaner power sector. So that's a huge injection of money towards those goals. But it also does a lot on priorities like environmental justice. And I think that's one of the areas that is really interesting to look at here, because it directs 40% of government spending towards communities that have historically encountered environmental pollution and racial injustice. And it does plenty of other things that are practically unprecedented for federal politics, including plugging oil and gas wells throughout the country. It's really a huge mix of ideas for how to tackle the climate crisis while still being a jobs-focused plan. It by no means addresses every problem facing us and every sector that the government needs to address when it comes to climate pollution, but it tackles the big three, or at least as a start, when it comes to transportation, building pollution, and the power sector.
And when they say $2 trillion, that's over what time period?
Right. So the government is typically talking about a 10-year period. So this is something that we'd expect to see rolled out over the next decade, especially when it comes to things like tax credits. So there are different ways that the government can support industries. And one of those for the clean energy industry is extending tax credits. So that is one example in this, that there's $400 billion extended in it for over 10 years for clean energy tax credits, while there are other programs that invest millions and billions of dollars in certain technologies, and that might be rolled out in a shorter time period.
Let's turn to the politics of this wager that the Biden administration is making. Are they betting that the American people want these things, but that it's going to be easier to fold Green New Deal type policies into an infrastructure package because the Republican Party has kind of demonized and kind of weaponized that term Green New Deal quite a bit. Is this the Green New Deal basically in another type of clothing?
It's an interesting way to put it. I think there are two kind of facets to this, and one is the policy and the politics that you're talking about. I think when it comes to the policy, actually, it makes sense for an administration to blend all of these priorities together because you can't tackle problems facing the economy and infrastructure without also connecting that to the climate crisis. We have infrastructure that's crumbling in this country, but it doesn't make any sense to just rebuild that as it is if it's going to just succumb again to extreme weather, sea level rise. So these issues are already intertwined. So I think that's one important point here. And Republicans have often, in criticizing this, like to say these should be taken in isolation, but it's actually impossible to do that. And then there's what you're talking about, the politics of messaging. And I think Democrats and Biden are making a bet that this is really popular messaging. He is proposing things like modernizing public transit and modernizing Amtrak, injecting investments in communities. And it's also fortifying the American auto manufacturers. So this is doing a lot that's really popular from a public standpoint. But I think by blending clean energy priorities with the traditional talking points about creating jobs and boosting the middle class, that Democrats are banking on that being a really popular selling point. I think if you saw a independent climate package like a very narrow looking or even a comprehensive climate plan, there's a lot of nervousness, I think rightfully so, looking at what's happened in the past, like the 2010 cap and trade bill that faltered in Congress, that if you have that standalone bill, that Congress would not get on board and that it would be an impossible thing to surmount. So Biden is trying to use here some tools that are available to Democrats in this narrowly controlled Congress to push a really ambitious package through while he can.
I think the administration may have tipped their hand a little bit. I saw an interview with Pete Buttigieg, the Secretary of Transportation, on Fox. I didn't watch it on Fox, for the record. I saw a clip of it, and he was asked, you know, what about all this spending and this, this is beyond infrastructure, isn't it? And he was like, we have to look at this in a holistic sense. I mean, when you have what happened in Texas with the freeze, people weren't able to drive. They weren't able to get basic utilities like clean water. And so it's all the same, really. Infrastructure and climate are being bundled for a reason because they affect us in similar ways when things break down.
Yeah, I mean, I think just this past year with the pandemic, that's really taught us how these crises can be intertwined, from racism to public health, that the government disinvesting in science and scientific expertise, what that meant for us during the COVID pandemic. I think you see that one of the best parallels for that kind of issue is climate change, that we have all the warning signs that we should be investing in infrastructure that can hold up against the threats of climate change. But if we are only rebuilding infrastructure like roads, buildings, and kind of just bulking up this fossil fuel economy, we're not addressing the root of the problem.
I've been a Roman Romeo. My Juliets have been many. But now my Roman days have gone. Too many irons in the fire is worse than not having any. I've had my share, and from now on, I'm putting all my eggs in one basket. I'm betting everything I got on you, Mama. I'm giving all my love to one, baby. Lord help me if my baby don't come through. I've got a great big amount saved up in my love account. Honey, and I've decided love divided in two won't do. So I'm putting all my eggs in one basket. I'm betting everything I got on you. I've been a
roaming Juliet. This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to environmental journalist Rebecca Lieber. You mentioned that the Biden administration is going to try to pass this infrastructure bill through a very narrow majority in the Senate and in Congress. Let's turn to how this could unfold in your mind. We saw that the stimulus package was passed through reconciliation, and we've already heard Democratic Senator Joe Manchin is saying that he will only budge if the corporate tax rate is 25% instead of 28%. So he's already kind of showing his hand that he's not going to sign off on this without a fight. There's no realistic way that the Biden administration can get 60 votes for this, is there?
Yeah, I think that it seems like a non-starter, but there are ways. Well, you mentioned reconciliation as one way of that the Biden administration has already kind of overcome those obstacles. Of course, reconciliation is pretty specific
to the budget, right?
Yeah. But I think when you see senators like Joe Manchin, who will be really pivotal in this, kind of laying down his line this early, that this what Biden is laying out is kind of a starting point for what will clearly be a long negotiation in Congress. There are certainly policies within this plan that Republicans would get on board with. I'm not saying they will vote for the package, but Republicans have in the past supported clean energy tax credits and investment because clean energy is also located in many red states. Republicans have supported energy efficiency investment. And I think when it comes to creating jobs by boosting American manufacturing, these are policies that Republicans claim to support. So while a final package will be certainly difficult and face an uphill climb, I think the messaging is also very much for now on Democrats' side. That's why we see Republicans and Democrats already battling over how to define this package, with Republicans saying that this goes beyond the scope of infrastructure, while Democrats like Pete Buttigieg making the point that all of these are intertwined. So it's going to be a big battle for public opinion.
But in terms of the logistics of it, they're not trying right now to put this through any kind of reconciliation process, are they?
I think the Biden administration so far has been playing a bit of a close hand of exactly how its strategy will unfold for Congress. I think there are certainly parts of this package that probably would be eligible for budget reconciliation, while there's other parts of this that fall outside of the scope of how you could use that tool. And when it comes to that, there is a mix of executive action that the Biden administration would have available in terms of if Congress approved funding. And then for, say, the Department of Energy, and the Department of Energy then can do a lot in terms of implementing it to see that those funds go towards supporting clean energy. So I think we're just starting to see how this will play out in Congress. Again, I think this is the start of what's going to be a several months long process to see how this unfolds. And it will include negotiations to bring along Democrats like Joe Manchin on board with this policy.
Assuming that Republicans aren't on board, how will something like this get implemented?
This is complicated. I think they're clearly putting a lot on budget reconciliation as the means here. So Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has already been revisiting the idea of using this again, just like they did with the coronavirus relief package, to use it for passing an infrastructure agenda. I think it's unclear because this is kind of an unprecedented era for using this to kind of muscle this legislation through, that it's unclear if this will be successful this early on, but they're certainly going to try because, like you said, the kind of obstacles of getting 10 Republicans on board with this are just so tough to surmount that I think they're putting a lot on budget reconciliation being the path. I guess it's I think too early to say if that fails, what happens next. But like I said, there are things here individually that Republicans are on board with that I guess in theory could be broken up in bills. But the Biden administration, by putting this together in a package, they want to pass something big, something visionary that tackles the whole kind of intertwined crises like racial justice that otherwise would not be addressed by this narrowly controlled Congress.
Addressing the reconciliation issue, while we were talking, I just read that the Senate parliamentarian just ruled that a revised budget resolution may contain budget reconciliation instructions for 2021. So it'll allow Senate Democrats to move two more reconciliation packages forward in the coming year and avert any Republican filibuster.
Oh, wow. I guess this just broke while we were on the phone.
So by the time our listeners listen to this, it sounds like Schumer and company scored a big win in terms of getting the Senate parliamentarian to agree to what they wanted to do, which they weren't able to do with, as some people may remember, including the $15 minimum wage within the stimulus package.
Yeah, and I think it sounds like with pushing ahead with this tactic, senators, particularly Joe Manchin, will be very pivotal here to get on board to ensure this passes.
And having the parliamentarian sign off on the rules, it sounds like Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin are they're tied to Senate traditions in many ways.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of debate also over the mechanism of how to pass legislation. But I guess, yeah, we also haven't had comprehensive infrastructure spending in I don't know how long. It was became kind of a joke during the Trump administration that whenever they wanted to pivot from bad news, it was infrastructure week. But we never got infrastructure spending. So there is concern about procedure, but also concern that we really it's past time to inject more money into our infrastructure to ensure that it's not literally falling apart.
And I think that is the tactical maneuver that they're making here because of the Trump administration, kind of the inside joke about this week is infrastructure week. So it became something that Republicans tied themselves to and failed. So instead of picking up the mantle of this Green New Deal that has been vilified by the right, why not just pick up this failed, very important issue that pretty much everyone agrees is important in infrastructure and dress up as much Green New Deal legislation into and fold it into infrastructure. And Republicans will still say this is way too much spending and we got to cut taxes to stimulate the economy and that there will be cats will be sleeping with dogs and that this is some evil Green New Deal that AOC has concocted in her laboratory. But the reality is this is investment in clean energy technology that is part of any kind of functioning society.
Yeah, and your point on Green New Deal and how Republicans have messaged on this is really interesting because I think that there's a lot to that because Republicans successfully defined what the term Green New Deal meant at a very early age. I think when people were not familiar with even what this meant, when Democrats were still kind of defining this for the public, Republicans, especially on Fox News, really hammered this point that this what meant socialist takeover, like fill in the blanks for what kind of hyperbolic statements they would make about the Green New Deal. And polls actually showed that did make kind of a point to Americans and shaped this idea of what a Green New Deal would mean. The thing is, the actual policies of a Green New Deal are very popular. We're talking about the basic principles that also come through in this plan. So while I think when it comes to the actual top line, like what we call it, that is not really what's important. It's the ideas. And Biden kind of doing his own like victory lap, like you said, by taking something that Republicans failed at, an infrastructure package, and releasing this as his first ambitious proposal, is probably a smart move politically, because he kind of leaves behind that negative messaging that really has followed the Green New Deal when it comes to maybe more moderate Democrats or conservatives, of just the name maybe bringing up bad feelings, even though they agree with the specifics.
Structures picking through the pieces of our registry carelessly. Elemental structures, nothing but a pebble and an oversight.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to environmental journalist Rebecca Lieber. So can you expand on the racial justice element of this? How would, let's say, a community in Richmond, California, which lives near the Chevron refinery, how could they maybe benefit from pieces of this legislation?
Yeah, so there's a lot that's really fascinating on this front. Like I said, the Biden plan puts it, they would direct 40% of these investments to disadvantaged communities. But there are other pieces of this, like injecting $45 billion to replace lead pipes and upgrade water infrastructure, like we've seen for crises that have affected areas like Flint, and also remediating kind of chemical contamination like PFAS in drinking water. But there's also one issue that I find personally fascinating, because the federal government in recent memory has not put any funding towards capping and cleaning up abandoned oil, gas, and mining infrastructure. So we have hundreds of thousands of these wells just lining the country that continue to leach pollution into drinking water and into the atmosphere. So the Biden administration puts here a $16 billion investment toward capping these wells, which would mean a lot for the communities that are located near these wells that dot the country. So you can see that there's kind of a mix of priorities for how to clean up pollution in people's communities.
Last month, we did a whole piece just on the abandoned wells. We had Megan Milliken-Bivin on the first week of March. Listeners can go into the archive and check that out. She has written out a long white paper proposing what she calls an abandoned well administration, the AWA, and makes a really good case for it. But sorry, go on.
Yeah, this is a huge issue. So I'm glad you've done more deep dives into this. Yeah, the final point here on justice, and there's more that I didn't mention, but one thing I think is interesting is highways and how highway pollution and cars have wrecked communities, specifically communities of color throughout the country that have historically seen highways right through neighborhoods and kind of cutting through neighborhoods, which then have to deal with the pollution that follows. So this plan also looks at highways in a few different interesting ways, one of which is there is money for building more highways, but there's also more money for building public transit. and solutions like even remediating highways that have hurt communities and developing perhaps a program that looks at the harms from those highways. So I think just the holistic nature of this plan and how it's looking at the impacts of our fossil fuel infrastructure and how that impacts communities across the nation is a really interesting and almost innovative way, considering how far Democrats have come just in the past 4 to 8 years on this issue.
Two of the issues that we focus so much on Sea Change Radio are our electric grid and also renewables. Maybe you can kind of outline what the White House has hinted that they're going to do to push for more solar rollouts and also to clean up the grid and in terms of electric cars as well. I guess there's a lot of EV charging stations budgeted, right?
Yeah, there is a plan in here for 500,000 electric vehicle chargers by 2030. I'm pretty sure that's word for word from Biden's platform from the campaign. So they're certainly promising more grants and programs to beef up our electrified transportation system. The plan also talks about replacing school buses, replacing postal service trucks with electric options, which is also huge because these, when we're talking about trucks and kind of shipping, those can be harder areas to decarbonize. So there's a lot for transit. And when it comes to the power sector, there is an investment of $100 billion towards modernizing the electric grid, to expanding rural broadband, and to expand, like I said earlier, clean energy tax credits that would hopefully hasten the transition to clean energy in the power sector.
And in terms of solar, I remember famously how the Trump administration just was very anti-solar, anti-wind. They wanted all the renewable tax credits to wither on the vine and let them do so. Does this infrastructure bill reintroduce solar, wind, and other renewable tax credits?
Yeah, it does. It has a 10-year extension of these tax credits, which is important because in the past, especially the Trump administration, these tax credits are usually, they've lapsed, and Congress eventually renews them anyway. But that lapse really causes huge uncertainty and problems for businesses planning for the future and trying to make these decisions of investments. If you don't know that you will continue to get this tax credit, we see every time these tax credits have even had a few months break until renewal that investments in renewables drop accordingly. So it's important to have the 10-year extension rather than this year-on-year extension that requires it to keep coming back to Congress, because it provides certainty for businesses that this is the technology to stay.
Rebecca Lieber, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
It's always great to talk. Thanks, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Samford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Derek Trucks, Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald, and Fog Swamp.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.